Before we get started, just a quick note to say that some of the names in this podcast have been changed to protect their identities, but the stories you are about to hear are very real indeed. Please check the episode show notes for trigger warnings, as listener discretion is advised. If you'd like to share your story on the Affair podcast, please email our wonderful producers on affair@curvemedia.com. Welcome to the Affair podcast. I'm Anna Williamson. Now, if you don't know me, I'm a relationship therapist, coach, and TV personality. Now, this podcast will unveil the secrets behind modern day affairs as we explore everything from emotional affairs to rebuilding trust after betrayal. One in five people have admitted to having an affair, but it's a topic that is rarely explored and remains taboo because it sparks such powerful emotions and judgments. Each episode features a different real-life affair story told by the people involved and offers insights into the emotions, causes, and consequences of infidelity in today's world. From the motivations behind affairs to the impact on relationships, we'll uncover the raw truth behind one of the most painful aspects of human relationships. So, without further ado, let's meet today's guest. Joining me on today's episode is Bella. Thank you for getting in touch with us and for being brave enough to share your story. So typically, as we know, there are the three protagonists in an affair: the person who's having the affair, the other person, and the person who's been cheated on. So if you will, please set the scene. What role have or...
I am the cheater. So I am the person that cheated, but I'm also the other person as well, actually thinking about it.
So there sets the scene of what I've had a little tidbit of what's gone on for you is a very convoluted situation. So start us at the beginning of you and your relationship. So talk us about you and your husband, and at quite a young age, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys got married, settled down.
Yes. So I grew up in the church, so that was a very much part of my formative life. And I met my husband. We were quite young. I think at the time we felt very old, you know, we felt quite mature and ready for that big decision. So he was my first boyfriend.
How old were you?
I was 19 when we started, just 19 when we started dating. And then we were engaged about a year and a bit later, and then I was married at 21. So yes, that was quite normal for us because we'd grown up in this environment where that was what people did, was they got, you know, it was like meet someone and then you get married and then you have children, and that was the sort of natural progression of the relationships. Yeah.
I'm curious to know, actually. So I didn't actually know that part of your story. And by design, for anyone listening as well, I by design don't want to know too much about my guest stories because I want to hear it for the first time as everybody else's. So actually, this is quite an important part of your story then, that you grew up in, it sounds like it was a big part of your life growing up in a faith. Mm-hmm. And did that dictate or influence then your choices when it came to relationships?
Yes.
Was there an expectation on you?
I don't think it was completely sort of put upon me. I think it was just because of the environment that I grew up in. That was what everyone was doing. You know, I went to so many weddings in that kind of my early 20s, and it was just the thing that everyone did. And so, yeah, I feel like it was a big part of the reason that we got married so young. And I also didn't really have any other kind of relationship experience. Like I said, he was my first boyfriend.
Who you met organically though? I mean, did you naturally fancy him?
I met him through the church. So and I did, you know, there was a connection, you know, it was, and I did sort of fancy him. And he actually, I think, cheated on, it was, again, very complicated sort of beginnings to that relationship. But we were so young, and I think, I met him, and I think also, I hadn't had any sort of much experience. I went to an all-girls school as well, so boys, for me, were an enigma until I was a lot older. And then I think it was just, I was sort of, the attention from him I found strange because I hadn't really had that before. And Yeah, so it was quite an important part of the sort of beginnings of our relationship, I guess. Yeah.
Did you, if you don't mind me asking, did you practice celibacy due to your faith?
So we did, and that was a big part of it. We didn't stick to it exactly, but it was very much limited. It was very much limited before we got married. Yeah. We didn't live together until after we got married. So I didn't really experience that side of things until then. Mm-hmm. We were quite restrictive.
And do you mind me asking, I know I sound like I'm being nosy, but I like to really get a flavour and paint a picture of what someone, because obviously you've got a big story attached to all this, and just what your mindset is. Was there desire for each other? Was there sexual desire? Was there connection? I'm trying to figure out whether this was kind of more of a faith thing or a natural predisposition.
There was some desire and connection, but I think it's now looking at it with the present day situation, I've realized that there wasn't the desire and connection that there could have been, if that makes sense. And also, yeah, I think a lot of the foundation of our relationship, actually, it didn't really have a foundation in the way that we didn't have much in common, and other than the church, and we weren't really friends before, you know, it just didn't. And I think that's why it crumbled later on. But yeah.
Right. No, I think this is a really important start to it, because as you say, I mean, when we talk about relationships, we do talk about those foundations and the why we're getting married. And for the why for you getting married, it sounds like, yes, there was, you know, attraction. It sounds quite sort of meh. It sounds nice.
Yes.
It doesn't sound like it was, you know, fireworks going off, but it isn't for everybody. But it feels like from listening to you, it was almost a sense of expectation and duty. It was nice enough. It was quite linear. It was quite traditional. We'll go with the flow. We'll get married. And tell me about that wedding day and how the first sort of throes of marriage were for you two.
The wedding day was a big family affair. You know, it was at the church where my mum and dad had got married, and it was lots of people that, quite strangely, I don't speak to anymore, just because of the way that life has changed. You know, it's sort of it was very much the people of the moment, and families, big family wedding, basically. And I think, again, coming to it from what I know now, you know, that it was very much led by, I felt like I was in control, but I also wasn't in control. There was a lot of people, kind of a lot of cooks involved in it, and it, because everyone wanted it to be a certain way. And I think because we were so young, you know, we couldn't afford it, so other people paid for it. And it was just all like that kind of very traditional family in that way, of that, you know. And like, we had a wedding list, for example, at John Lewis, which I now think that did literally set up our home. And actually, that's not the same for many people nowadays. Many people have a home already set up before, you know, before they get married. But we had that very much going and picking out our crockery and our, you know, all of that kind of thing. So it was all very like exciting and lovely in that respect. But I look back on it now and I'm like, was it just a thing that we did because it was the thing that everyone did, if that makes sense?
Right. Because it sounds actually, and this is not me, like, it sounds very nice, but it sounds exactly like my parents' wedding was, you know, back in the 80s, kind of very proper. It also sounds, just from how you've described it, that you weren't very present.
I look back on that time now and I just think, oh gosh, I was so young. I was so young. And I think I was present and I was trying to, you know, make my mark on it. But at the same time, I didn't. Like, someone told me when I was talking later on about the feelings towards this other person, and they were saying, well, you got married so young and your brain isn't fully formed until you're 25. Like, you're literally not an adult or a grown person until you're 25.
You're right. Yes, the prefrontal cortex of our brain, which is responsible for our decision making. Yes, it doesn't mature until our 20s. And many people, particularly generationally, got married. It wasn't unusual at all. And it isn't unusual to get married, you know, early 20s. But society now is a lot older. But nobody's saying that's right or wrong. I think it all depends on the connection that you have and your intentions around the marriage. And from what I'm hearing, and just sort of setting the scene, because you did start the episode saying that you were the one that had the affair, which also, I would imagine, if you're talking about growing up in a family of faith in the church, was probably the biggest sin. Yes. Possibly. I mean, I know a little bit about growing up in a faith family myself, you know, and people of faith do have a huge opinion and values around that. So, I mean, I'd like to explore that at some point too when we get to that part. Okay, so it all feels quite nice. You say, you know, grown up, you know, had a very complicit in your wedding, sounds like a nice guy. Nice wedding, it's all nice, you know, you were present, but it sounds like, you know, went with the flow because that's what is the done thing. And I think arguably as well, you're right, now with the benefit of that hindsight lens that you have, you've recognized that just how much you just did then, because you didn't know there was any other option or any other. And I think a lot of us definitely feel like that. That's the whole point of maturing, right? Because we see our lives through one lens and then we mature, we have more life experience, we meet more people, we do more things, we experience other opportunities and we go, oh my God, there's a bigger world out there. Actually, has something lit a fire in me that I didn't know existed? And I think this is probably what is taking us to where, you know, present day has ended up. So before we get there, tell us what happened then. So you were married, and then so tell us about what married life was like, and you added to your family with children.
Yes, so we had two children. Again, I had them quite young, so not, you know, we hadn't been married that long, and they were quite close together. And you know, it was fine. Hard work. Our relationship was hard work. Once the children were added to the mix, I think it was when it started getting tricky. And I think I started also thinking, what was my purpose in life? There was very much a, who am I? What do I want to do? I don't think I just want to be a mum as much as I love my kids. And I think there was that, but there was also, again, like there's just this, there was a bit of a disconnect between us. He did some stuff around money, which I didn't agree with. There was some sort of, what I now would look back and say, actually, that's a financial cheating. He did some, hid a lot of stuff around money behind my back, which.
May I ask what?
I came back one day and found a final notice on our doormat. And it was after my first child. I was on maternity leave. And the final notice was for a £12,000 payday loan that I had no idea about. Yeah.
So how did, I mean, honestly, just to insert into this, you know, financial infidelity is a real thing. And actually, you know, finances, money problems are one of the biggest reasons for couple breakdown, actually. And it definitely shouldn't be underplayed. You know, I know we're talking, I think actually you bring a very important perspective into this, because we're talking on this podcast around affairs, which typically are emotional, physical, sexual. But actually, we should definitely be weaving in financial infidelity, because that's another string to the bow of infidelity. And it can kill marriages, you know, on the spin of a coin. So did you confront or discuss this with your husband at the time?
Yes, I mean, I had to. I mean,
Yeah, that's a big deal, like 12 grand's worth. And also, just to put it into there, when you are legally married to somebody, their debt is your debt.
And I was very aware of that. And I mean, he tried to blame me and say, well, not, he tried to say that it was because I was on maternity leave and I wasn't earning as much as, and, you know, he was just trying to make the family work, and he was doing it for everyone's sake. And I'd sort of, again, in this baby bubble, buried my head in the sand about what was being spent. I never really took an interest in the finances. And that was the moment where I was like, oh, hang on. No, I need to like take an interest in what he's doing, because clearly he can't be. He's not spending responsibly, or But I confronted him, and he just said, well, yeah, you need to be more interested in the finances. And I was like, okay, yeah. And then in the end, we ended up using some inheritance money that I had got to pay it off. But it was always there in the back of my mind, and it was always money always was always a thing for us. It was always an issue. It was always really tricky ever since then. And I just think we just didn't, again, because we didn't have that foundation of friendship. We just really drifted as well, just in terms of even the things we couldn't agree to what we wanted to watch on TV, because I had very different tastes to him. And, you know, I would sit and read a book, but he would say, think that wasn't doing anything with him. He wanted me to sort of be there and be present, but I was exhausted. And, you know, just the normal things that I think happen in a relationship, but we didn't have the foundation there.
So how did you show love for each other during that time?
I think that's where it, I don't think I can even answer that, because I don't think we did. I think there was a real loss of respect between, like, he didn't respect me, I didn't respect him, for various different reasons. And I think it was also around COVID. I'm thinking about this now. You know, we couldn't go out and escape and go for date nights or do anything that you would normally do to create that connection. We were very much stuck in a house, and there wasn't much love, I don't think, between us. It was just, yeah, just a pootling along, coping, parenting, mm-hmm. You know.
Routine. Which a lot of married people, particularly in the COVID days. I mean, I was one of those as well. I had a newborn in the COVID days too. You know, relationships, we know anecdotally, but also statistically, took a huge impact during those COVID, the COVID era, which we'd like to all forget. You know, my own relationship absolutely, you know, had an enormous challenge around that time. Through the very notion that, yeah, we were all very stressed, we were all very isolated, and we were all trying to figure it out with no outside support. And when, to your point, you don't actually have that bedrock of friendship or even respect. I mean, when reflecting that back to you now, what I'm hearing is, yeah, a relationship that was ticking along and doing fine when things were good, but the minute you removed kind of the stabilizers, it was starting to implode. There was clearly lack of trust and secrecy around financial matters. There was resentment. I'm sure he resented you for some things. It sounds like he did for you, perhaps not taking an interest in the finances, which are joint responsibilities. It sounds like you had resent for him for racking up a massive debt without bringing that issue to you. You know, and here we face a very common problem with couples is disconnect. When we disconnect, it creates a chasm. Then we start throwing shots at each other. Then we start to get, you know, and what John Gottman, very big relationship expert, talks about are the four horsemen of the apocalypse, you know, contempt, criticism, defensiveness, stonewalling. All of these horrible things creep in where we just go, do you know what? It's time to disconnect, or I've already disconnected. And the reparation becomes even more difficult. So at this point then, was there any part of you that wanted to work on your relationship, or do you feel like you had checked out or were checking out?
No, I don't think I checked out at this point. I think at this point I was almost didn't realize how bad it had got. I think I was, like you say, sort of just coasting in it. I think I was getting more and more resentful, and I think I'd try and bring up things and I'd just be shot down. It would be, we didn't ever really talk about the issues. I think I remember when we were getting married, we went to something at a church called a marriage preparation course.
They're brilliant. They are brilliant. Honestly, they're brilliant. The church do them. And I think really, honestly, I'm a big pro for these.
And I think had I not been 20, I would have got a lot more. And I did get some things from it. And one of the things that they said, and I think when I look back on what happened between me and him, one of the things they said is that when you have a problem, imagine that you're on a sofa and put the problem in front of you. We never did that. The problem was always between us. We never faced problems together, ever, I don't think. And the minute I would try and bring up something in a way that, oh, that's hurt me, or oh, you do, I don't think you're aware, but I don't, I would be, it would be shut down. Right. Because one of the things I learned about him through the years of knowing him is that I don't think he's very emotionally open or intelligent. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to confront his emotions, and he doesn't let me have mine because of that.
That's a problem. Yeah. That's a really, really big problem. And I can see then where at this point, I mean, you set the scene beautifully for it to be a gaping hole of need, of yearning, of pissed off, probably. Excuse my language. And there we have sort of the perfect ingredients, really, for somebody to have their head turned, have their emotions turned. So bring us in then to around this time, you were working and you met a gentleman.
Mm. Yes. So I want to preface this whole bit by saying, and also that's the reason why I'm on the podcast as well, is that if you'd have told me that I'd have an affair, I would have never in a million years believed you, anyone. And in fact, when my husband, he said, if you had me and him in a room and you asked all our family and friends, one of them's had an affair, who is it? 99% of them would have said him.
What were your thoughts on infidelity? I mean, you came from the church.
Yeah, I thought it was, I think I used to think very much black and white, right and wrong. And my dad had an affair. That's the other thing. When I was, when I was...
Bombshell, hello, hang on, go back.
So my dad had an affair when I was young, and I found out about it. I kind of remember the fuzzy kind of family, emergency family meeting and being sort of shipped off to people's houses. And I kind of vaguely remember that. And then it all kind of, as I grew up, it was common knowledge. You know, we would talk about it. And him and my mum are really great now. They've been great for years and years and years. And
what, still married?
Yeah, still married, happily married, really worked really hard on their relationship. So I guess I've seen it from that. And in my head, it was always, well, he was, you know, how wrong of him to have done that. And, you know, I think, like you say, you grow up in the church and with a faith, and it's adultery is one of the sins, isn't it? You know, and so, yeah, it's, I think before this, I viewed it like that. I don't view the world like that anymore.
And yet you find yourself working with a gentleman.
Yes.
So tell us about this.
So it was just after COVID and things had opened up again, and I went back to work, and I met this person, and we got on. It was, you know, I wasn't working very much. It was sort of 2 days a week, and I'd sort of cross paths with him occasionally, and I thought, oh, he's, you know, I instantly found him attractive. He was instantly my type of, you know. But at that point, I was, you know, well, I'm married and, you know, it's fine. And we got on, and as time progressed, we would, you know, have a bit of just fun together at work. Nothing, again, like nothing that, in fact, he would message me, and there was nothing in those messages that I wouldn't have shown my husband. It was all very kind of above board, friendly. He had kids, so we were kind of, and he was married. So, you know, it felt like a safe kind of, oh, okay, you know, we can be friends. We're, you know, let's hang out, have fun at work. It was all laugh, and, you know, yeah, it was just, but like an instant kind of connection and an instant kind of warmth, I think.
So carry on. So you've got, you know, you get a friendship. We all have mates. You know, I've got male mates, platonic friends. Sounds like that's what was happening at this point. It did. Now, be honest with me. Be honest with me. At this point, were you physically attracted to him?
Yes. Yes, 100%. He was, like I said, he was my type from, yeah. And I was, but I was also, every time I'd think that in my head, I'd go, no, well, you can't. He's married, you're married, you can't, you know, that. So it was like a very much an awareness that I was attracted to him. And then as things kind of started slipping into like a kind of what I'd call flirtatious, shall we say, more of a flirty kind of bantery, I started talking to other people around me as a way of kind of being accountable, because I was like, I don't want anything to happen here. Like, this is, I can't let anything happen. So I told my mum that I liked this guy at work, but, you know, I was not, nothing was going to happen. I told other colleagues and friends, and it was kind of just a thing of, I'm going to like address the elephant in the room and be like, I think I really like him, but nothing can happen because we're both married. So I did that. And there was a specific moment I remember where he got me a gift, and it was just, and as he handed it over, I thought, oh no, you like me too. You know, when you sort of had that.
What was the gift?
It was just a gin tinny. But we talked about things, and he'd put it in a little gift bag and like handed it over, and I was like, oh, you've listened to me talking about something. And
now, isn't that and often this is it's not the grand gestures ever actually that make the most impact. It's the simple ones that demonstrate that someone has listened, as you say, and has tuned into you.
The other thing that I think, and I like reflect back on it as well, is that one of the things that my husband, he'd never supported me with my job, ever. He'd always found it that he didn't ever sort of, and he never knew how to praise me, but he never knew how to sort of congratulate me if I did well at something. There was never any of that with him.
There was no affirmation. No validation.
None of that.
Yeah.
Whereas I got that from this other guy straight away. And because it was in the place of work, which, you know, I love my job and it's a very big part of who I am. And I was getting that from someone at work. And it was very much a, you're doing a great job. And it was that affirmation that I never had had. And that gave me a confidence as well that I was missing in myself, I think, too. And it was just the whole pack, you know, when you're like, it was basically filling every single thing that I was missing.
Every void that you were experiencing at the time was coming from another man, not the man that you were married to, but from another man who, as you just said, was also married.
Yeah.
And I think, so you said you'd kind of, you know, mentioned it to other people to kind of, by way of accountability. Had you ever told him that you liked him? Did he know? He gave you gin and a tin, which was a kind of a little thing of yours. Did he know that you liked him?
Not then, I don't think. I think we both would say it was that kind of connection. I don't think he knew for sure until the next thing that happened. I'm trying to get this in chronological order, but the next thing that happened was his wife found these text messages that, like I say, weren't anything I wouldn't have shown my husband, but she really didn't like it. So she essentially kicked him out of the house and was like, you can't speak to her again, you know. And he and I got a message from him that said, sort of apologized for the way he behaved and sort of saying, you know, I've been flirting with you and it's because I really like you, but it needs to stop now. And to which I replied, yes, I agree. So I think there was that was the moment that it was kind of
acknowledged.
But at the same moment, things obviously on his end were very tricky. And then I didn't see, he moved workplaces and I didn't see him for a year and a half, basically.
Oh, wow. So literally from that moment, so the wife got eggy. She's not stupid. You know, she'd picked up on there being some sort of attraction. You know, and this is where kind of the grey area comes into affairs, because some people don't consider, and this is really, there is no definitive answer to this either, by the way. Some people might have defined that as an affair, you know, having, you know, sharing messages with someone that is not your spouse, that would be intended for your spouse. Otherwise, some people consider that fair. Some people wouldn't at all. They just say it was friendly banter or whatever, a bit of flirtation. And it all depends on the dynamic of your relationship, of your marriage. Mm. And, you know, we talk a lot about ethical non-monogamy nowadays and things like that. I mean, that was not the situation that you were in. Some people can constitute affairs as sex. Some say it's emotional infidelity. It is whatever is in the dynamic of your relationship. But would you have said at that point that you were having an affair, teetering on an affair, or was it at this point just, you know, fluttering eyelashes over a few text messages?
I would have said it wasn't an affair at that point, no. I would have said it it could have gone on to be one. But I think yeah. I'd also put in place by talking to my friends and talking to my mum, I was very much like, this is not going to be one. So I think...
What was their advice? I'm curious. What did they say? Like, I'm just thinking now, if I went to my mum and said, mum, look, there's this person I really like. I'm worried I might have an affair with them. I'm curious. I don't know what she'd say to me, if I'm honest with me. She'd probably tell me to behave myself. I don't know, actually. What did your mum say?
She said, I think because the way I phrased it to her was I said, oh, did you ever sort of find anyone else attractive? That's how I started. Did you ever find anyone else attractive? And she was like, yeah.
And that's interesting because you've just told us that your dad cheated on your mum. Yeah. So I would have imagined your mum may have had some quite strong feelings around that, no?
Yeah. My mum is like my favourite person. And she...
Love that.
She's a trained counsellor as well. So
she's love this. Very... So she's balanced. She's very...
mental.
Yeah.
And she was just very honest. And I think she said... Oh, you know, I fancied a few people here and there, but I sort of then tried to sort of say, I think this might be more than just, well, I definitely like him, but I don't know. And she was just like, just keep talking to me, you know, you can of course find people attractive, but just don't act on it, you know, and just, you know, keep talking about it and keep it. I think her advice was just to keep it in the open. That was her advice. Keep it in the open. Mm-hmm. Keep talking about it.
I think that was from counsellor to counsellor, yeah. Very good advice, because you say affairs, sort of part of the definition of an affair is secrecy, yeah. Is the secrecy. So I think actually it was very brave of you to bring that out in the open and just say, look, I fancy someone else. And as you say, at that point, is it just filling a void, which you clearly had? Like, let's not beat around the bush. There was clearly a lot that wasn't working in your marriage, in your relationship. And it takes two, but regardless of that, we're not apportioning blame. We're just stating the facts. There were clearly things it was not working within your marriage, and there was a huge disconnect. When we feel a disconnect, we are seeking what we're not getting, whatever that might be, emotional response from someone, sex, validation, anything, you know. And it sounds like you're getting that, but you were halting, actually kind of crossing a line at that moment. So you say he moved away, yeah. For 18 months, but he came back.
So yeah, he basically ended up back in the same workplace 18 months later. And I found out he was coming back. And I instantly was like, huh, what's this going to be like? Because within those 18 months, I would say things had deteriorated further with my husband. I think I'd thought about this other man more than I probably should have if it was just, you know, he'd been there in the background of my thoughts quite constantly. And I was mostly just excited that he was coming back, actually. I was like, oh, I'm going to have this person that is kind of a friend and we can have some fun. And I was like, oh, but we need to be in there. But then in the same breath in my head going, oh, but I need to be really careful because what's going, you know, we don't want to go into affair territory here.
So tell me what happened when he came back. Did you have that conversation with him? And what was that initial moment like?
We did. We had that conversation almost straight away. And it was very much like, yeah, we're gonna draw a line. We are just colleagues, and that is all we're gonna be. But I think very quickly it became apparent that those feelings were still very much there on both sides. And you know, I mean, to put it into a timeline, I think it came back in sort of April, end of April, and we kissed in July. So it was
wow.
And I think that the sort of what you were saying about keeping things in the open, because of what had happened 18 months previously, we knew we had to hide whatever communication we had. So from the beginning, the communication the second time around was hidden because of the way that things had transpired the last time. We went underground, as you were, straight away.
Yeah.
That's where we were. And I didn't talk to anyone this time around. It just was straight away, hidden.
What was driving that at that point? Was it just pure lust?
No. I mean, there was that there, but I think it was mostly that I've got just that connection, that friendship, that respect, that, you know, in that work setting as well, where it's like, he's my cheerleader and my champion. And it was like that too. And it was, I just wanted to hang out with him and be around him as much as possible. And yes, it was, there was very much a lust thing, very much so. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't, we also kept saying to each other, it's more than just that. It's not just, I want to, you know, take your clothes off. It was, I just want to be with you all the time. And, you know.
And he felt the same.
Yeah. And I think we did try. So for those months in between, we did try. We tried things like, we tried to write stuff down in a notebook rather than talk to each other. And we tried to, I remember writing things like, this can't happen between us, but I want it to, but it can't. And, you know, this is killing me. Like, I'm torn between like duty and desire. And like, I remember just writing all this stuff, and it was such a complicated thing. Just all of it was just like,
it sounds intoxicating, actually.
Yeah, it was a bit as well. Yeah, it was like, it was, and it was, but it, but I, and I will say this about the whole affair. I didn't get off on any of the secrecy, any of the thrills. That wasn't it for both, for either of us. We were both hand on heart, say that didn't add anything to our affair. In fact, if anything, that was the worst bit of it.
Well, it sounds like, as you say, because you said before this, you know, affairs were not something you would ever have thought that you would enter into. And it sounds as though the emotion and the compulsion just took over. So several months of trying to keep it under lock and key, it happens, you kiss. Do you then embark on a full-blown physical and emotional affair?
Full-blown didn't happen until a few months later, just because we couldn't find an appropriate time. But then, yes, from then on, it was full-blown physical and emotional. And I was in love. I was absolutely head over heels in love with the person that I was like, I would only describe him as my person. And you think, and I had this moment of, oh, this is what it's supposed to be like. Okay. And like, suddenly the sex in movies made sense. And I was like, yeah. Sure.
How did you know it was love and not lust?
That's a really true. I just, because it's just such a deep connection of just supporting each other in every area, not just, I want to rip your pants off. It was, I want to sit and talk to you. I want to know what's going on in your brain. I want to do things with you. Like, just experience life with you. I think that was how I, yeah, knew it wasn't.
There are many different schools of thought around what love is. One of them is that someone called Robert Sternberg, theory of love, is that there's intimacy, passion, and commitment. Intimacy, that's physical, emotional intimacy. Passion, that's, you know, passion of interests as well as sexual passion. And commitment, as in, you know, that deep respect for each other and that belonging to each other. Would you have said those three things were present there?
Absolutely. Except the only thing that was hard was the commitment thing, was because we were both married to other people. So that's
right.
We as much as we could, I'd say all those three things were there, definitely. Right. And there was a longing to be committed to each other. But it's not quite straightforward when you're already married.
Those are to be interpreted as you say. But so, I mean, there's the elephant in the room, and let's confront that. You know, you were both married. You were both married to other people. Did either of your spouses have, firstly, what was the situation and the state of your marriage at this point? And did either of your spouses have any idea what was going on? And I guess essentially, how did this end up becoming out in the open?
So at the state of the marriage, it was very much, at that point, I was actively trying to avoid my husband, I think. So once things with the other gentleman progressed, it was, I would spend as much time not in the house as possible, which is hard when you've got kids together, but, you know, and it was very much ships in the night. I would, you know, just try and not be around him very much and just, you know, and it was just, it was quite a depressing state, to be honest, to be living in. Mm-hmm. there wasn't much suspicion, I don't think, on his side, as in my husband. There were a couple of things that he was sort of, I can't remember exactly what they were, but there were, I think, a couple of times where he was a bit like, what's going on? Or I can't remember what it was around now, but because the way that me and the other man were communicating was so locked down, there was nothing on a phone that would have given anything away, anything like that. On his side with the wife, I think she was suspicious, but from day one, because the minute he went back to work with me, she was on edge. And because of that, everything had to be really planned out. So every single thing we did together, he would have to plan a backstory, plan an excuse. You know, it made us both physically very ill. We both lost our hair. He had a bald patch. I lost about 2/3 of my hair. I used to have.
Wow. So the stress of keeping this secret from your spouses was actually making you both lose your hair.
Wow. And it was. Yeah, that's probably, you know, that's one of the things I really, that was the thing that I was like, we cannot keep doing this. We cannot. So there was suspicion on more on his side than on my side. But then we actually got to a point last year where we knew we couldn't carry on because it was making me ill. And it was just, we knew it wasn't sustainable. Mm-hmm. And we also knew we wanted to be together. So we met up and we agreed to have like a kind of break. At the end of that break, just like almost come up with a decision of, right, what do we do? Do we end it between us? Do we tell our spouses? Do we, you know, we just decided that we needed to do something. And I'm sort of grinning to myself because then we decided to do that. The break was supposed to start on a Sunday and my husband discovered the affair the next day.
I mean, it sounds as though the weight of this whole secret had just completely absorbed the pair of you. And like, I just keep visualizing like these two cornered rabbits now. It's like, it's got to come out. And one thing we know about affairs is they come out and they are typically not pretty when they do. But so your husband, there you are, you're going on a break, bingo. Day later, your husband finds out. Tell us what happened.
So he, like I said, we communicated via like sort of encrypted emails. So we found a sort of encrypted email thing and that's how we would communicate. And
damn. I mean, you were really looking into it.
Yeah. And he like, and that's the other thing that I look back on and think, again, I think communicating via emails, they were in depth. I mean, we could write a book with the amount of emails we sent to each other. So it was like, that was the way that we communicated. But I was usually really like hot on logging out and I just had forgotten to log out and I'd left my phone. And I think, like I said, there was a bit of suspicion bubbling in my husband, I think, because he'd realised how distant I'd become. And I think he got my phone and opened it because he knew my passcode, because I never changed my passcode because I didn't need to. And I think I must have fallen asleep with the email thing open on my phone. And I was downstairs in the kitchen. I remember it so well. I was downstairs in the kitchen and he came down the stairs and he went, we need to go upstairs now. And I knew. And we went upstairs and we shut the door and he said, you've been having an affair, haven't you? And I just said, yes. And he asked who it was. And I said, someone at work. And he said, okay. And then it all becomes a bit of a blur. And then he left to go to work and he was working somewhere else for the day. And I think that was the
so there was no shouting, screaming at that point.
That.
Sounds quite transactional in words.
Yes. It was transactional because it also had to be because he had to go. He had to leave for work. And he left and I had to take the kids to school. And the first thing I did was go to my mum and dad's. And I had to tell them which was in some ways just as hard, to tell your parents that you've been having an affair.
What was their reaction?
My mum, they were just my parents. They were like, it's okay, we still love you. And they, you know, they were like, I think they were most hurt that I'd kept it from them, that I'd been the one that had been lying to them. But they weren't surprised. I think they were surprised in terms of, oh, it was you. But I think they weren't surprised because they'd seen the state of our relationship.
Right.
And I said to my mum, oh, it's the guy from before. And she was just like, okay. And then my dad came in at that point and I had to tell him as well. And my dad said something like, when I had the affair, it was a two-week, he had a two-week fling with this woman from work. And he was like, this isn't that, is it? And I said, no, I'm in love. This is, I'm not, you know, this is not just a fling. And my mum was like, no, I know, I can tell that too, you know. And we just talked about it. And I think I said to them that when my husband got back that evening, even if he wanted to sort of work on it, I was going to say, no, I'm done. But then it didn't quite happen like that. It just took a lot. Yeah, he came back from work and we spoke until about 3 or 4 in the morning, I think. And I think he surprised me because he came back and he was like, I understand what, he was very understanding actually.
Wow.
He said, I understand why you've done it. He was like, I know I've been really hard to be with. And he was like, and I think that really like threw me. And I was like, oh. And he was like, and I want to work on it for the sake of the children and for the, and I think we just basically spoke for like a whole hours and hours and over that whole week. And he was like, he said, you know, you need to just like cut things off with the other guy and we can just try it, work on it. And there was this, this is the right thing to do. There was very much that duty thing of, yeah, no, that's right. I need to try and make this marriage now work.
And did you try?
I think I did. I think I could say that. I did. I had this one last conversation with the other man on the phone. I said, this is over. I'm going to try and work on my marriage. At this point, I knew that he'd left his family home.
And so his relationship had broken down.
Yeah. And there was no way that was going to come back again. And I said, have a nice life at the end of the phone call. And then just cried for about 3 hours. And then was like, yeah. And went back to my husband. And I think for six months, we did try. But it was hard because I think I knew it was so broken that it wasn't. I think I just was like, it was so broken.
And you were in love with another man.
And I was in love with another man. And I remember having some counselling myself. And I just said, I feel like a pendulum. And like some days I'm like, I really want to stay with my family. I can't break up a family. It was that like real, you know, I can't do this to the kids. This is, you know, when something's hard, you work at it and you don't just give up and you don't just, and then the other side of me was like, well, no, because you're in love with someone else. So don't, why are you trying to make that work? Like,
Bella, this is classic head versus heart. Your head was telling you to stay, but your heart was telling you that you wanted to be with a man that you loved. Yeah. And the whole mechanics of that was just deeply problematic. And you tried. But you just said there, you know, 6 months you tried, but ultimately it sounds as though, you know, the writing was on the wall.
Yeah, I think it was just, though it was too broken. My friends and my, you know, my family, and they've all said the same. They were like, it was, you know, that, I can't say that word, but breakdown of a marriage. And there was no coming back from it, no matter how much we tried. Because there was mistrust on both sides now. You know, there was him with his financial stuff that was going on and me with what I'd done. And I think I was holding on for the sake of this idea of a perfect family, which never existed.
And a lot of people can really identify with that. And it sounds like, from my perspective, so many cracks, who knows whether they could have been repaired or not, but the bigger the cracks, the harder the work, the bigger the journey. And many people do get to that point of no return. So you officially left your husband?
Yes, I officially left him after Christmas. I think that's quite a normal thing to, I think we went through the...
It is. It's a cliche.
It was horrible. And I knew that I had to go, I had to be the one to leave. I was like, he's not going to leave me, clearly, because he's stayed through this. And I was like, that was horrible. I was like, I went for brunch with my sisters in the morning and they were just like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I'm like, I know I need to leave. I need to leave. And I went home and I said, I think I'm done. And it was probably one of the hardest days of my life. That was because my sister came and grabbed the kids, took them out of the house, and I packed a bag. And he was fuming with me because I think almost all the anger from before had then come out because he thought we were going to work on it. And he was like, you promised me, you know, it was like this, you led me on for 6 months. You made me think there was hope. And I was like, that's the one thing I regret is that it didn't just end it when it all came out. That would have, I should have done it. But again, hindsight's a beautiful thing. And you don't.
Isn't it just? Yeah. One thing that you couldn't have done though, is continue a relationship, that was based on, lies, you know, which essentially is what it would. And I mean, here we are in present day, and I don't doubt that that breakdown, and breakup, sorry, was very painful for you both. But whizzing us through to present day, just for the sake of time as well, because you speak so beautifully and so emotionally, and I'm so in your emotions right now. Where are we now in present day? Your marriage broke down with your husband, but you continued with the guy. And where are we now? And there was also a very, we're going to gloss over it for sort of privacy reasons, but my God, there's a bit of a kind of a situation.
Yeah, so right now, me and the other guy have been together since I left, and I'm the happiest I've been in a very, very, very long time. Because it's love, it's connection, it's my person. And
how long has it been?
Since Christmas. So yeah, six, however long it is now, 10 months. Mm-hmm. But we want the rest of our lives together. You know, we talk very openly about blending families, and you know, we want that in our future. And yeah, he's just it's chalk and cheese to this, you know, and all my family can see it too. And you know, they're making comments like, oh, you look so healthy, and you look, you know, we've got our Bella back, is what they say, you know.
Right.
So yeah,
so it's been accepted. And what about is he your ex-husband yet, or are you still married?
We're still married, but it's in process, so it's not far off being.
So your ex. So what is the situation between you and him now? And also, you did tell me something which made me drop the mic.
So we're co-parenting, trying to co-parent as best we can, but he has a partner who happens to be the other gentleman's ex-wife.
Mic drop. So your now new partner, the partner that you, you know, had the affair with, his ex is now with your ex.
Yeah. It's wife swap.
I mean, it really is wife swap. Wowzers. Yeah. And how do you feel about that? And equally, and also, how do they know each other? Did they bond through this experience? Because we have had this on other episodes. Yes. This has happened.
So I think one of them reached out to the other one last year, and then again reached out once I'd actually left. So I think there was an initial sort of reaching out of and talking a little bit back in last year, and then again it all came out.
How do you feel about that? How do you and your partner feel about that?
It adds complications, shall we say. It's a tricky one because things aren't necessarily amicable on my partner and his ex's side. Mm-hmm, and now it seems to sort of bleed into mine and my ex-husband's side. So it's a tricky situation to navigate, definitely.
Yes.
But, you know, I can only speak from my experience. And, you know, that's kind of why I wanted to come on here and share my side of the story, because I'm sure to them and that I'm the monster that broke up two families, you know, we are that actually it's never that straightforward. And maybe, you know, me and my ex-husband, we were not right for each other at a core level. And maybe my partner and his ex-wife were not right for each other. And actually, some people work and some people don't. And maybe my ex-husband and his ex-wife, maybe they are meant for each other. And I just think that's just it. You can't put judgment on anyone's, you know.
Yeah. You are where you are. And one thing we absolutely know is that relationships are very personal. They're very convoluted. They're very complex. And nobody truly knows what goes on unless you walk in another person's shoes, which is why I certainly never cast judgment. And I think many people listening to this now have had their eyes opened or not, actually, you know. But I think you speak so eloquently about your situation. Thank you for doing so, Bella. What would you say, just as we come to a close, what would you say that you have learned about your experience of being in an affair?
I think it comes back to that the whole way I see the world is different now. I see it in shades of grey, and I think I see it in ways that's nothing is as straightforward as it seems. Like you say, you don't know, you can't live in another person's shoes. You can only live in your shoes. And therefore, that means that you can't pass judgment, I don't think. And I think it's made me realize that whereas before I would have seen in black and white, I would have very much been like, that's right, that's wrong. I don't view the world like that anymore. And I think that's a positive thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think, and I've also learned that to always listen to myself a bit more as well, and to go right, to understand how my emotions, what I need, and not let myself get to that point again where I'm that unhappy.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of stand up.
Would you do anything differently?
I think, like I said, on just a few questions back, I think I would have. If I could have done, I think I would have ended the marriage at the point where the affair came out.
Thank you so much, Bella, for sharing your story. And as you say, the very notion of your mother, I love her advice. I've taken it quite literally, because we're keeping this in the open for everybody to share and to listen and to be a part of this conversation. And I wish you, your partner, your children, and the other spouses, I wish you all the very best for what I truly hope for all of you will be a future that brings you all love and peace.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Affair Podcast. If you've been affected by any of the issues raised in today's episode, please see the show notes for organisations who can offer support and advice. Don't forget to subscribe so you are the first to know when a brand new episode drops. But until then, I'm Anna Williamson, and this has been The Affair. The Affair is hosted by me, Anna Williamson, produced by Naomi Channel, and is a Curve Sounds production.